You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
On Monday, Cabinet announced it would not be removing the COVID-19 self-isolation requirement of 7 days. This is hoped to continue to contribute to New Zealand having one of the lowest COVID-19 mortality rates in the developed world. I spoke to Dr. Emily Harvey, a researcher from the University of Auckland, who created scientific models to see what would happen if the requirement was removed or not closely followed by most people. I started off by asking what the scope of the research conducted was. Here is that interview.
So what we've been looking at is if you removed case isolation and people didn't stay home following that guidance, how much of an increase in transmission would you expect to see, and what would that turn into in terms of an impact on infections, hospitalizations, and deaths over the next few months?
How would ending the 7-day isolation period affect infections after the first 2 months, according to your research?
So if the mandatory isolation period was removed and some people followed guidance but some people weren't able to, we would expect to see an increase in infections and hospitalizations over the next 6 months of between 8 and 25%. And in the short term, following the removal of mandatory isolation, if a number of people weren't able to follow the guidance to still stay home and there was an increase in transmission, we'd expect to see a wave in the next month or two, leading to an increase of between 27 and 91% increase in infections, hospitalisations.
Wow, that's quite a large increase.
Yeah, and some of that's in that we're looking in a very short term at a wave, and you're comparing it to what if that wave didn't happen. And so that's why it's quite useful to look at what would happen over the whole next 6 months. And that's where you get your smaller estimates of more like 6 to 18% in terms of number of infections and 8 to 25% in terms of an increase in hospital admissions and deaths.
How would ending the 7-day isolation period affect infections in the older population?
So one thing that we found in this work is that in particular the older population and those with health conditions who have been shielding, staying home where they can, those people have so far avoided infection and are right now the most vulnerable. They already had elevated risks and they don't have the immunity from past infection and vaccination to help them. They only have vaccination. So they're disproportionately affected by a change at this point.
What are the most important ways to keep the community safe from infectious diseases?
Yeah, so we've actually learned a whole heap in the last 3 years about this. We know now that COVID, influenza, a lot of these respiratory illnesses are actually spread through the air we breathe. And so the best thing to do, obviously apart from staying home when sick, that's number one. But in general, if you can make sure that the environment you're in has fresh air, that you're not breathing in a lot of stuffy air that someone else has breathed out.
Are there any other ways to reduce community transmission?
So all the measures we've looked at in the past that we used to actually have as rules all help. So things like people who are at high risk of being infected because they've got a household contact who's infected, having them limit their interactions is helpful. Things like doing a test if you get symptoms, doing a test before you maybe go to a high risk setting like visiting an aged care facility, those all help. And obviously masks. There's a bunch of situations where we can't make sure that the air we're breathing isn't out of someone else's lungs. Things like buses, obviously, are an obvious one in Auckland. And in those situations, masks can really help to stop you breathing in other people's air, but also to stop any viruses you've got spreading to other people.
Which entity can be expected to offer guidance to businesses, schools, and individuals on reducing COVID transmission?
So it differs, obviously, for all of those different entities. So with businesses, it's my understanding that that falls under MBIE, Ministry of Business, Innovation and Enterprise, and WorkSafe probably also has a role to play there. That's where your unions, your health and safety reps are the ones to go to ask about that. Within schools, Ministry of Education is the key path for advice getting to schools. And the source of that advice in terms of public health measures all comes back to the Ministry of Health and the new public health organisation that I don't remember the name of in the restructure.
Okay. Finally, do you think it's likely that the isolation requirements will be scrapped at the next review and by Cabinet in 2 months?
I think the current mandatory requirements that sit with Prime Minister and Cabinet are going to shift to being more like other infections that are managed by health. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't still isolate. It's just that the legal requirements are going to shift, where the responsibility sits in the background is going to shift. But for individuals at home, that what you should do if you get sick stays the same. That advice is still the same.
So it is actually a mandatory legal requirement to self-isolate. I didn't know that.
Right now, that is the law, yes. If you test positive for COVID-19, there is a mandatory 7-day isolation period from when you first developed symptoms.
Next, I spoke about COVID-19 self-isolation requirements with epidemiologist Professor Michael Baker. I started by asking what his opinion was on the potential removal of self-isolation requirements from law. Here is that interview.
Well, Cabinet has announced that it is retaining the 7-day mandatory isolation period for the next 2 months, and then it will review at that point. The wider context, of course, is that New Zealand's relaxed almost all of its mandatory requirements to limit transmission of this virus. Going back in time, obviously, we had many other restrictions, including vaccine mandates and obviously manage borders tightly and lots of other measures. So really, the last requirement we have is that if people are sick with COVID-19, they have to self-isolate for 7 days to reduce the chance that they're going to go back to work or school or social events and infect other people.
I understand Cabinet will then not be lifting that restriction for another 2 months. Is this recent news?
This was announced at the post-Cabinet press conference on Monday afternoon by Chris Hipkins. And this was a scheduled review of the restrictions. Recently, government did remove some of the mandatory mask requirements for healthcare and aged care, but they're still retained in some settings. So that was a relaxation of controls. And most of the measures, of course, are very much voluntary, as they have been throughout, and that's particularly around vaccination and boosting. And that's still the number one measure for people to protect themselves. As of the first of this month, the government has made the new bivalent COVID-19 vaccine available for everyone over 30. So all New Zealanders really have the world's best vaccine technology available at no cost. And I really hope that everyone takes advantage of that. Everyone who's eligible takes advantage of that, effective vaccine. And the main change, of course, it's bivalent, so it's got two components. It's got the original component, and it's also got a new component that covers the Omicron subvariant, which is the dominant circulating virus in the world for the last year, and may well continue to be in that position. So this is really an important update to the vaccine. And so everyone over 30 is eligible to get that at no cost. And at the same time, you can also get your flu vaccine. So it means in one visit, you can protect yourself from New Zealand's two biggest infectious disease killers, which is COVID-19. And influenza.
What about for those under the age of 30?
Well, the difference there is that hopefully they've all had their primary vaccination down to the age of 5, which is two injections of vaccine. And some may have been eligible for a booster as well, depending on whether they have other underlying health conditions. Young people already have good protection. And the evidence is that the combination of that plus high rates of infection that have often occurred after vaccination means that they have a high level of protection, and also the risk of serious effects from this infection is much less in people under 30. It rises steadily as you age, unfortunately, and risk of serious effects gets very high for people over 65 or 70.
Bringing it back to self-isolation, what about allowing people who test negative to come out of isolation before day 7?
Yeah, look, I think that is a good strategy. The main difficulty is that it does depend on people testing themselves frequently during the course of their illness. And that's one of the problems that also that often people may only test positive after their second or even third test, and they may already be 6 days into their infection at that point, 5 or 6 days in. But yes, if you test positive and then test negative after that, you can go back to work and school and so on. So that is a better approach. For people who are quite organised and are prepared to test themselves, say, every day after day 5, and as soon as they're negative, just resume normal activities.
Are you aware of any scientific studies on the potential ramifications of removing the self-isolation requirement?
There's some modelling evidence that self-isolation does reduce transmission of the virus. Some of the evidence is that New Zealand still has the lowest COVID-19 mortality of any high-income country. Our cumulative excess mortality is still in a negative range, which is quite remarkable. So after over 3 years of the pandemic circulating in the world, we're really almost the only country, I think, that's in negative territory. In other words, we've had fewer deaths than we would expect over that period based on the pattern of the previous few years. So that is remarkable. And I think it provides in what we call ecological evidence that the New Zealand approach of being, I think, quite conservative and quite assertive in managing the pandemic has really saved many lives. So I think the current quite cautious approach of the government is sensible. And remember, COVID-19 is on track, even with the current restrictions, to cause up to 1,000 deaths this year in New Zealand and put well over 10,000 people in hospital, which is a huge burden on the healthcare system.
I guess that answers the question whether or not vigilance around COVID-19 is still needed.
Yeah, we know now that we're not tracking every case. I mean, that was really left over. That was the approach during the elimination strategy, and that was a completely different strategy doing that.
What made the elimination strategy different from what we have now?
Well, basically, we weren't tolerating any circulation of the virus for 2 years. And so as soon as you had any cases, you had to find and isolate all those cases and prevent them infecting other people. And it was a very intensive approach if you've got an outbreak. But it did mean that New Zealand, for much of that two-year period, most of the country had minimal restrictions.
And lockdowns and so forth.
Well, we actually spent less time in lockdown than virtually every other high-income country because we didn't really need them most of the time. If you look at places like the UK and most countries in Europe, they were going in and out of lockdowns the whole time to try and keep the numbers of cases down. New Zealand had a short, relatively short, intense lockdown at the beginning of the pandemic to stamp out the virus. And then we had other periodic lockdowns to deal with outbreaks, and then Auckland had quite a prolonged lockdown with the Delta variant, but the rest of the country managed to avoid that. So overall, over the first 2 years of the pandemic, we actually had much less interference in our lives than most countries.
That was Dr. Emily Harvey and Michael Baker of the Cabinet decision to retain COVID-19 self-isolation requirements in New Zealand.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.